Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts, typically with a focus on Kenpo. As always, I am your host, Reggie Darden, and I am very excited to have another Kenpo great with me today.
You cannot say that. You cannot say Kenpo great. I'm just a Kenpo. Thank you.
Well, okay then. Well, I've got another wonderful Kenpo guest here, Mr. AC Rainey. And yeah, we're going to talk about his journey and kind of whatever other items that we get into. I usually start things off with kind of giving my history, but before we hit record, I kind of filled Mr. Rainey in a little bit on my details. So I will not bore you all with that sort of thing again, but I will just turn it over to our guest here. So just go ahead and fill me and the listeners in on how Kenpo found you, where did it all start, and we'll just kind of go from there.
All right, well, the easiest place to begin is when I got out of high school, or I started playing college football, and then I started playing wrestling. I was pretty good at the college football, but it was the first year of my college wrestling that I got the crap beat out of me, and some guy by the name of Dave Hebler and Paul Dye showed up at class or in the gym one day, and I was sitting there packing my crap, getting ready to get out of here. You're going to probably hear some background right now.
No problem.
So, at that particular point, they were doing a demonstration in the gym with a couple other people, and it was pretty good gym, pretty good demonstration. I just was not in the mood to listen to a lot of the crap that they had to say. And Paul and Dave Hebler both looked up into the bleachers, if you will, and asked anybody that they knew or saw, did anybody want to come down and try to beat one of their guys in Kenpo, or better yet, in fighting? I pretty much poo-pooed it off. And when I say poo-pooed, I really mean I poo-pooed it off. Dave actually will tell you that. However, that said, Paul Dye did something stupid and challenged me because he said, "Hey, stupid." Well, he said, I'm going to cut it short. He said, "Look, are you chicken?" And the whole nine yards, you don't want to do this. I said, "Oh my God, are you serious?" And these are true stories, because this happened not only with Paul Dye, it also happened with Rich Hill, so I really wasn't interested in martial arts at that time. I'd already done the judo stuff, and I really was looking forward to doing the more of the football stuff, and it was the end of the season in the wrestling thing. What happened after that is they challenged me, and Paul Dye asked me if I was chicken, and I said, nothing, and I went right straight down, and I accepted the challenge of Kenpo. I dropped down in the wrestling stance, took out the first guy that they put up against me. They asked me if I could do it again. I said, "Yeah, I don't think so, but we'll find out." I took the second guy down before I even realized what the hell I'd done, and realized at that particular point that I didn't screw up, but I realized that, I was being invited to a school that I had no idea. Now, you have to understand, there's a plane up here flying around. You have to understand that I really wasn't interested in Kenpo at that time. I was actually looking forward to a college career in football. And they invited me literally 2 minutes after I took their second man down to come to their school and learn Kenpo. That was the beginning of a love affair with Kenpo Karate, because then following Friday, that Saturday, I showed up and there was a guy by the name of Jim Thompson, and he was such a humble man, but he was also such a inviting man, and that man took charge of my development of Kenpo all the way until, I suspect, when I was a second brown belt. During the next 24 months, actually 23 months, during the next 23 months, I studied, practiced, taught, and wrapped myself up in Kenpo so much that I didn't even know I had a scholarship in football to several other colleges. My father didn't know anything about how to handle that kind of stuff, neither did I, because it didn't really matter at that time. All that was really mattered is that I had purpose in my life. So Kenpo provided the purpose, along with Paul Dye and Jim Thompson and a couple of Dave Hebler and Ron Chappell, who I would meet much later in my fighting days. Ron Chappell was the main guy who actually improved my fighting so much that I really didn't have. So he improved my fighting so much that I became what's the word where you have too much confidence?
I'm struggling for the word myself, but I know what you mean.
Articulate this stupidly. I want to call the word or a something other. Anyway, whatever that word is, I was stupid, and actually Paul Dye and I both were stupid for the next 2 years. I got my black belt in 22 months. Paul got his in 24 months. We became roommates, and we did Kenpo for 16 hours a day for the next 2 years. And after that, Mr. Hebler closed the school. Jim Thompson went and worked for a rock star, so did Mr. Hebler. Mr. Hebler worked for Elvis. And I went in the Air Force. A little bit after that, and I was teaching in the Air Force, and I've been teaching Kenpo ever since. So I suppose I'm not sure how many years that is now. I think it's 54, 55 years now I've been teaching Kenpo.
Excellent, excellent.
That gives
excellent.
You an idea of who I am.
Very nice. I'm going to have to kind of go back a little bit. I'm going to have to grill both Mr. Dye and Mr. Hale.
Oh, absolutely. I want you to grill them both. I want you to grill anybody that was connected with me, because you know what? It has been fun, but those next 2 years, I devoted myself to Kenpo prior going to the Air Force. And when I went in the Air Force at that particular point, that's another story, and I'm not sure I want to tell it, because just like some of the other stories in Kenpo, I'm not prepared to tell all the stories at this particular point.
Oh, not a problem. The reason I say grill those two is so they both have been guests on my show, and they did not bring it. Neither one of them brought up that story. So I'm going to have them back on and grill them a little bit about that.
Absolutely, please, by all means, do. I mean, hey, look, I'm from here on out. I thought that being what's the word? Humble was all about not letting people know who you are. I am. Recent events in my life has told me that I have to start letting people know my story. So this is my truth.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I started this show, is that I wanted to get these stories from the source. You know, there's a lot of things that go around in not just in the Kenpo world, but you know, people say things, and you know, people play that telephone game and things like that. And I didn't want there to be that confusion around some of these stories. So having the people that lived it on the show to tell it, you know, from their own words is the way that we keep this kind of information preserved and out there, and you know, keep the truths out there. So I really appreciate that. Going back a little bit, so when you were at this demonstration, like what was the thing that, you know, you mentioned that you weren't really, really interested in the Kenpo, but what was the thing that brought you over or sold you on it?
I saw Dave Hebler do a technique that was so freaking fast in the whole nine yards, and I realized at that particular point, should I be able to move that fast, that quick, that hard, that strong? And it was actually him and both Paul Dye when they were doing techniques. I thought to myself, I'd never seen motion like that. I'd seen Kenpo once before. I've been involved in trying to be a Kenpoist once before, but that asshole wanted me to take my head. So that when I saw these guys, I really didn't want to have anything to do with Kenpo. But that said, I think I was auditioning to become one of their students at that particular point. I didn't realize that when I was going to become a student of Dave Hebler and Jim Thompson, I didn't realize I was going to be in the art that long. And I had no idea about what it was that I'm getting myself involved in. And short circuit, literally. I realized that I wanted to be part of the Kenpo. And a few months later, I was introduced to Ed Parker in the class. And I think this was like right at first year. Oh, this was right at Blue Belt. And I learned to be directly in the front line, so I could hear and see Mr. Parker all the time whenever he came to our school. And he came to our school quite often after that. I don't think he had ever come to our school that often, but he came to our school quite often. And it was right around that time I was starting to make a name for myself as far as their fighting and stuff of that nature. But to go back to and answer your question, what made me decide to do that? Probably because I made one of Dave Hebler's students look really, really bad. And I thought, oh, this is fun. I can do it again. And I did. Every Saturday, every Friday, every Wednesday, every Monday, it didn't matter what it was, I improved, and I literally learned to understand not only Kenpo from the aspect of its techniques, but Kenpo also from its aspects when you apply its principles all day long. And I hate to say it this way, but I did excel with an A in the art, and I excelled it so fast, a lot faster than I even thought. I was telling this story yesterday again, that for me, Kenpo was everything, and we didn't spend like 3 or 4 hours in class as far as doing Kenpo itself. We spent, Paul and I actually became really, really strong friends. We're still strong friends now. However, Paul, me, Patty, another person, we actually started practicing our art for 16 hours a day for the next 2 years. That is the main reason why I ended up getting my black belt in 22 months. My brother got his black belt in 24, 26 months. Paul Dye got his black belt in just a little bit under 23 months. I can't really speak for him. But I will say this. Kenpo became my life, and it has really formulated everything that I know about life, with one exception. Not as many people in the world are as gifted or as disciplined in life, and so sometimes life becomes a real disappointment. But what are you going to do? It's life. There's so many freaking people out there. Stupid.
Yeah, I hear you. So to kind of go back again a little bit in that first demonstration, I'm curious in one aspect. So looking through the lens of the popularity of grappling, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and that sort of thing. I'm curious as how the reaction of ask the question here. I'm curious you mentioned that you took a couple of those guys down in that demonstration.
Yeah, I was wrestling. I took them down with wrestling moves, literally. Literally. They didn't understand what happened to them. They had no idea what was going on. We didn't have an open conversation or open study of jiu-jitsu at that time. I was a great wrestler in high school. I'm not saying that I'm a super great. I was a great wrestler in high school, so I knew what the hell I was doing. They had no idea what they were doing. Mm-hmm. They were guessing.
That's the thing that I was.
That was an ego booster.
Yeah, I bet. So I'm curious, like, you know, what their reaction was to the ground part of it, and was that something that
No, stop. I did not choose the ground portion. I did not. I hate groundwork. I totally hate groundwork. Okay, if I'm gonna fight Nona here, I'm gonna beat you from the ground from standing up. Period. That's it. But let's back up so you understand, have more of a grasp of how that occurred. When I was a young pup, my father was a military man, and we somehow ended up going to Japan, not accidentally, but because he wanted his family with him, and he enrolled me, into a judo course. My brothers didn't want to have anything to do with it. In that judo course, I learned how to create balance in the whole nine yards. And I got to as far as a child. When I say child, I mean child, like 11 to 13 years old. And I had fun. You can check this out at the Kodokan School of Martial Arts in Tokyo. I don't put this out that often, and the reason is because I haven't been back to Japan. I do know that the Kodokan School of Martial Arts, Karate, Judo, Aikido, whatever it is, they exist, or did exist. 3 to 4, maybe 5 different floors, with each particular floor devoted to a particular. As a matter of fact, now I think about it, I need to go find out who the person that was there owned that building. All right, so I'm going to back up. I learned judo not for my sake. I learned judo for the sake of my brothers and sisters, yes, family, and loved ones. I also happened to live next door to Mrs. Kent and her daughter, Terry Kent. Mrs. Kent was a Aikidoist back in the day, who actually helped me to learn and understand what it was about balance. And so me and her daughter became very, very, very good friends. I was not trying to be that, what I was trying to do is just have fun as a kid, because I didn't really have that much of a childhood. I'm not quite sure where I'm going to go with this. You were talking about groundwork and all that crap. I don't believe in all that stuff. I really don't. I think it's bullshit. I think bullshit more than often people think about it, because they haven't been in circumstances like I may have been in. But there's never going to be a day when you got to get in a fight and you go to the grounds and you're not going to get the shit beat out of you. And I see those guys practicing going to the ground purposely. Stupid shit. Sorry. I am animated and I don't like a lot of shit. So you'll have to excuse me.
No, that's perfectly fine. You know, speak your truth. That is fine. No, there's always lots of debates about ground fighting and things like that. So.
Bottom line is this, okay? I've done judo and I've done grappling, okay? Both of them. And I know for a fact that in the sport of jiu-jitsu, they don't have a freaking chance against anybody else that knows how to really fight. Because nobody else is going to willingly, wantonly go to the fucking ground. So it's a fucking sport that should not even exist. I get it. And I'm talking about Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I'm not talking about the other jiu-jitsu out of Japan. I know those guys. I fought with those guys. I had to slow down. And they have to slow down in order to make their shit works. So don't ask me any more about the questions of jiu-jitsu and grappling. Let's get real.
Gotcha. I am curious then, what would you say since I'm big on cross training and I train in quite a few other styles, I'm curious what you would say, what other styles would you say that you've officially, you know, formally trained in? So we have the Kenpo and the Judo.
I am one. I am a warm martial art guy. I've never tried to do anything else. Judo, grappling, jiu-jitsu. I am not those guys. Even my, what's it called? PMK, Filipino Martial Arts. I love my Filipino Martial Arts. I do. I'm a one-person martial artist. So everybody's got all those degrees in various different arts. That's great. I love it. Okay, I'm not claiming it. I'm only Kenpo. So that's all I am. That said, a person should concentrate in a thing that they're best at. Cross-training is cool, but that word cross-training is a fad, because you don't become super, super good in all of those sports, literally, if you're trying to study them all. But you can pick one that you're the best in, and you can understand why your art is either superior or not superior, and why you are very good at that particular art. Because everything else that you study is secondary. It's totally secondary good. Anybody who believes I'm going to tell you something. This is my personal point of view. Anybody who believes that they're so good at two arts at that particular point, there is a big mistake being made. Okay, and it's called ego. I don't care about that. My ego is my Kenpo. My ego is me understanding what it is I teach. Understand that word, teach. Because when I teach or you teach, we learn a whole lot. But in this, say again?
They'll be in your punch out.
Okay, I haven't forgotten. Thank you. So, like I told you, I'm at a pub. Okay, so getting back to what I was saying is, anybody who believes that they're that great at both arts, there's something wrong. Okay, you want to be a superhero in both arts? Great. You're good at one and you want to be greater in the other. That tells me you want to be even better at the art because you're not as good as you think you were in your present art. I'm not trying to be a superhero or super Kenpos or anything like that. I know who the great Kenpos in our art is. I know where I stand in relationship to those people. And I don't really give a frat. Now, the reason I don't give a frat, Reggie, because you got to get here where I am no matter what. There's not too many people who have been doing Kenpo for over 50 to maybe 55 years the way I have. So I've got a lot of confidence, and I'm never going to ever admit to trying to being good at jiu-jitsu, judo, wrestling, all those funny named ground sports. I'm not doing it, okay? I do Kenpo. And I know my Kenpo is very good compared to everybody else's jiu-jitsu, judo, and all that other stuff. So I've seen it. You know what I'm saying now. I sound like an arrogant asshole. I know that. I'm sorry I do sound that way. But I got to tell you something, and you're not going to believe this. I've been arrogant at Kenpo ever since the first year that I started learning. And I've been really arrogant because me and Paul Dai, I learned my arrogance from Paul Dai. And he's not going to like me saying that, but I learned my arrogance from Paul Dai. And Mr. Parker endorsed it. Mr. Parker endorsed that shit. Are you serious? Okay,
you understand
where I'm at now.
Gotcha.
Ask me a better question, please.
Gotcha. So I'm curious about the teaching part. When did that start for you, and was that something that you were always interested in being a part of? Or
you're talking about again? Did you say teaching?
Teaching, yes.
Yeah, well, that happened in the third month of learning Kenpo. That was an accident. Mr. Hebler was losing some of his black belts. Especially one of their Eric Kratt, who was at that time the best Kenpoist in the school. And Eric Kratt ended up going to teach. Eric Kratt went to teach at, went to go to college at a school in Montana, way north, up near. Anyway, that was one, that Eric Kratt was probably one of the best Kenpoists in Dave Hebber's school. As far as teaching is concerned, I was kind of thrust into it, along with Paul Dai. And when we were thrust into it, this happened at Orange Belt. It didn't happen up Black Belt. It happened at Orange Belt. And so part of our teaching and understanding of where our art was, bottom line is, happened because that was our payback to Dave Hebler and keeping students in the school. One of the people that was really, really responsible, too, I'm going to mention two people, is, oh, God, I just went blank with it. I will come back to that. We'll circumnavigate back to that. We won't. Phil Conti was a Golden Gloves boxer and a champion Golden Glove boxer. And he taught me so much. Remember, I told you that 16 hours a day is what I did. And that was at the school. That didn't count all the time at home. Yes. So 16 hours, Phil Conti would show up and he needed somebody to beat on. And I ended up being that guy he beat it on, which is fine. As a matter of fact, Jim Thompson also was that guy that beat the crap out of me. I can tell you stories about Jim. Make me piss blood. I love that man. I really did.
Oh my.
Back up. That said, the art was about fighting. It was not about principles. It was not about the idea of understanding what you do for how this movement and all. Nobody, I didn't give that shit. Phil Conti taught me that. And then I'm going to tell you about a second person. Now, you got to understand something. This is in Covina, Glendora area. There are very few black people there. And like I said, these guys, they recruited me out of a school called Mount San Antonio College. So I was in my seventh heaven because I knew that what I did was really subversive to everything else everybody else did. But at the same time, I knew that I had fallen into something that I was really great at. The second person of this dynamic, which would show up in my second year of teaching, was, oh, she's going to hate me for saying this. Dion, I'm just going to say the word Dion at this particular point. Dion was the fastest man in Kenpo that I'd ever met in my entire work. He was so fast. He was faster than, he was faster than Mr. Parker. He was faster than any of the other people that you'd want to think about that novel. He was fast. He was faster than Dave Hebler. Okay. So what do you want? I'm doing an interview. Go away. All right. I told you where I'm at.
No worries. Like I said, the show just, okay. We go with what we got.
Last name, I have to give credit to this guy, Dion Steckley and Phil Conti, okay? Jim Thompson. Those are the people that formed and, groomed me in the art of Kenpo, along with the guy by the name of, he's not going to like me because I'm having such a hard time remembering. Sifu. Ron Chappelle, okay, BKS. So all those guys literally are the ones who moved me forward in Kenpo, literally. And when I say literally, I can never, ever, ever, ever in my lifetime thank them enough. And this was all under the auspices and teaching and guidance of Dave Hebler. It wasn't Mr. Parker. There was one other person. His name is,
you know, he's ready.
I'll come back to it. We'll come back to it. But that was at the Pasadena school, and we'll talk. But there had nothing.
Not like that in New Orleans.
Just 30 minutes?
Okay, you get the idea. I'm done answering that question. Let's talk about something else.
gotcha. Thank you. So,
by the way, who's doing this interview? You or me?
Well, that's the thing about this show is that I love talking to Kenpo folk in that they love to talk, so that's less work for me. So, you know, like I said, we just kind of just go with the flow, and whatever comes out is what we've got. So, but yeah,
this is working really good.
I like it. I did want to hopefully touch on two things.
Hold on. All right, they're quieted now. Go ahead.
I wanted to see about if you had a story to share about one about working, training, you know, learning from Ed Parker. And then I also was curious if you had a story that you wanted to share.
We talked about. And it's occurred twice, both at the Pasadena School and at Dave Evers. And that is, Mr. Parker would pull me out of the class. I was always lined up in the front line. You have to understand that this was 1974, 75, in that time frame.
You see all those freaking people behind me?
Yep.
Over there and make them quiet down.
You're much more much more capable than I am of taking care of them. But we're doing all right.
Talk about Mr. Parker. I can talk about Mr. Parker when I did a test. I can talk about Mr. Parker when my brother Michael did a test. I can talk about Mr. Parker when he came to the school and he started teaching the idea of crossing hands and the idea of circular motion going into linear motion. I can talk about any of that stuff.
Like I say with pretty much all of my guests, I mean, we'll definitely have to do a part two and part three. There's so many different things that we can cover.
Are you saying we're done?
No, not at all.
You already know this is me now interviewing you, right?
that's fine. That's fine. I love the lively conversations, and I'm always happy to give back as well. I'm curious, I guess, when training with Mr. Parker, was it kind of obvious at the time that, you know, he was really kind of ahead of his time as far as the things that he was coming up with? And
yes, that is absolutely. Mr. Parker was always ahead of his time. The problem is with Mr. Parker, and is that not everybody could get on board with what he was trying to teach in the whole nine yards. And I earnestly mean that. I, of course, studied under a couple other people as well, but Mr. Parker, as far as the average student, they were teaching a structure that was, people were trying to maintain that structure back in the day, which is not a problem, except for one thing, it created limited ability to move and limited ability to think about their art. Not even in Master Dave Hebler was able to comprehend everything that Mr. Parker was teaching and then pass it on to the students. We did not. We had the same amount of hours in understanding our heart back in those days. As
I remember when I wrote quick and character, I was like, I can't.
As we do today. The problem is now today, everything's about technology. Back in the day, it was not about technology. The technology was for principles. That was the technology of the time. So that means, why did and how did jiu-jitsu come and be ahead of kenpo or any motion or martial arts? It's because they happened to have the idea of focusing. So let me explain something. I'm going to say this once because I'm not sure that many people understand what this little thing means. Kenpo, reality speaking, is the study of motion. So we can study motion and we can study big motion. And when we study big motion, we're only going to pick up the big stuff. You're never going to understand anything else about that motion. Kenpo is not just about the big motion, it's about the small motion. It's about the real tiny things that go into creating power. And that said, that is the hardest lesson, and this is for everybody. I've only seen maybe two kung fu martial artists who teach the same type of thing because that's what martial art is supposed to be about. Whether she's Shotokan, Chidoru, White Crane, American Kenpo, which is what we do.
You have to replay that, but oh.
We do Kenpo very badly. I should tell you that. But if you break it down, if you start to really understand your emotion, if you start to understand the principle, if you start to understand, I have a student, his name is Todd Durgan, and you probably might want to talk to him, but here's the point. If you really start to understand the geometry and how we should never memorize our art. Mr. Parker didn't want us to do that.
You're probably easy.
Yeah, how do you do that? You got over 180 freaking techniques. And you say you don't want us to memorize it? Are you serious? No. Mr. Parker, what the fuck?
You put now your hand reels and the 49ers that are fucking real to the team. They're not.
I really don't care anymore what other people think. So I don't care. Please put whatever it is that you see me talking about. It's all yours. But I sincerely mean that shit. I really do. Because he was on the right track the first time. He shouldn't have changed tracks. We had all that motion no matter what. The hardest thing about for me being a Kenpo, now, I'm going to tell you this. This is true stuff. Not understanding how to break down the memorization of the motion that I had. Not until the later years. The only way you get to do that is when you teach. And I really hope, no matter what, you take that to heart for your audience, because I love Kenpo. I will always love Kenpo. I suspect that I'll probably be practicing Kenpo to my 90s. And I found several students who can do Kenpo the way I do it. But in most part, when you watch other people structurally work, when you work Kenpo structurally, then they lose tricks.
So let's, we'll just go ahead and just jump into our lightning round here. So I just got a few little questions and then we'll wrap it up here. First question being, do you have a favorite technique?
No, they're all favorites.
Sounds good. I like it.
Last one must be. I've been doing it for 50 years. No, I do not have a favorite. Sorry. Oh, hold up. Maybe I do. Destructive frame. It's because it's from BKF. But most people don't know that.
Okay. There you go. I like it.
You're not going to find it in the Kenpo curriculum that you're studying.
Gotcha. Well, I'll have to get you to fill me in offline at another time, but very nice. Next question, do you have a favorite form and or set?
Yeah, 6 and my TND set number 2. We have a form called TND set number 2. I teach it to all my students. It's representative of me from my BKF days. It's also representative of my style and my way I move. Yes, TND 2. That said, the next step form that I have that's my favorite would be 6, long form 6.
Very nice. I like it. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
I do. It's called knives.
Very nice. I like it. All right. Then the next question. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker.
Danny and his son.
Nice. Great answer. Yes. I like it. That's good stuff. All right. So now our final thing here is shameless self-promotion. So if there's anything that you wanted to plug or anything that you wanted to say that we hadn't covered.
It took too long to get to where I'm at, despite how quickly I got to black. Bottom line, whatever you learn fast, you really do forget it fast. And it took a lot of time for me to restudy and understand my art. Simple people, we see each other moving, but we forget a lot of the principles and we never try to learn it principles back. I have spent the last 15 years relearning the principles that Mr. Parker really wanted us to have. The hard part is that most Kenpoists never go back because of our ego or because we're the shits at that time. So, yeah, I'm going to leave it at that because I'm embarrassed when I talk about that.
Very, very well said. Very well said. Well, so yeah, I thank you so much for taking the time to be on and sharing a little bit of your story there. Hopefully we can connect at another time and get into some more things, but I'm just truly appreciative to get to chat with you and hopefully we can do this again at another time, but yeah, just thank you so much.
I hope I have not been too real.
I think we could use a little bit more real these days. There's a lot of not real out there that real is a good change of pace, at least as far as my interest are.
So tell me something. Here's the question now. Are you in Dallas or are you in Fort Worth area?
I'm technically in Fort Worth, but for those that know the area, I'm right on the line, right on the border of Arlington and Fort Worth. If you want to be specific,
but, okay, very cool.
I find that maybe a lot of times when I tell people Fort Worth, they don't understand. So then I say Dallas Fort Worth, and then for some reason that people understand that.
I understand. I really do.
So, but yeah, one of these days,
a chance to visit you, and I appreciate time that, and I appreciate you having me on.
Yes, no, thank you so much. Of course, you're welcome anytime. I'm just something that just kind of came to mind. I'm not sure if you're a part of it, but next month there's going to be a seminar with quite a number of folks that are going to be out this way.
I'm going to say it again. I'm not.
Okay. Okay. Well, not a problem. We'll have to find some way to get you out here or I come visit you or something, sometime in the future.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Well, once again, I thank you for being on and, I can't wait to get this out for, everyone to hear. And, I look forward to chatting with you again.
Amen. And thank you again for having me on. And you know what? I really did enjoy my time with you. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. That's the, thank you so much. I hopefully I'm not too boring.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I'll talk with you soon. I'm going to hang up before you hang up. Bye.
All right. Ciao.
Right. Didn't do it right. I did. Come on, you can do it.
No, thank you so much.
By the way, I hate technology. Okay, we're done.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.